Chloe is absolutely grateful that I'm using this picture of her, all right? I just said that. Well, Carol picked her, sent it to her, and she said, I'm so embarrassed. And I got a couple of pictures. Yeah, she used to be a tomboy. You wouldn't know that now. I still wish I had a recording of her and Alex singing. They used to sing out in the playground, top of their lungs, anything you can do, I can do better. They still did that whole song, but if anybody was listening, they'd cut it off all the time. She used to, and I think I ruined her because she wanted to come. I got this deer and she wanted to come out and help me with it. And I insisted, you go over there while I field dress it. She said, no, I want to watch. Oh, man, I love this. And she told me just a couple of years ago, that really bothered me. I told you not to be watching. but that's what destroyed her. But the word we're talking about tonight is flexibility. And we're going to talk about that for a few weeks. We're going to look at something concerning flexibility from the Scripture, learn some character traits and different things about flexibility, not just defining flexibility. I'm going to turn this on so I can move around a little bit. Now we on? All right. Flexibility. And that's a key word in this day that we live in today. And so many people have their life so scheduled out and so regimented as something. You know, I was thinking a good animal we could do. This isn't an animal for tonight, but watch the show, what is it, Bug's Life? Remember when the ants were marching in row and all of a sudden a stick came in front of them? And the one, oh no, what do we do? That's what a lot of folks are like. They can't take the slightest, I think that was on that show, wasn't it? Folks need to learn to be flexible, especially in our, and that'll help you to be a joyful Christian too, if you'll just learn to be flexible. In fact, the two great qualities I think that has helped me in the ministry and helped me in life in general is just to learn to see humor and everything. Sometimes that gets me in a whole lot of trouble. To be flexible. And what we're talking about flexibility tonight is simply sensing. And this is kind of a long phrase to write down. We'll give you a memory verse here in a minute. Sensing and adapting to the wishes of the one that I serve. Sensing and adapting to the wishes of the one that I serve. We're going to look at a Bible character, and we're going to look at an animal tonight that illustrates that for us. I encourage you to jot these down and memorize the verse that we'll give you tonight, Colossians chapter 3 and verse number 22. You don't need to turn there. You can if you want to, but I've got it written down up here. And just remember the reference, and let's read it together a couple of times, all right? Colossians 3:22. Servants, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh, not with eye service as men's pleasers, but in singleness of heart, fearing God. Colossians 3:22. I put an extra S in there, didn't I? Let's read it again. And you think you can get it if I cover? These girls were so smart last week. I covered it up and they still got it. Let's see if we can get it. Let's read it again. Colossians 3:22. Servants, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh, not with eye service as men pleasers, but in singleness of heart, fearing God. Colossians 3:22. Your masters. Oh, that's a word that we're not allowed to use anymore, huh? Our masters and our servants. By the way, a Christian's called to be a servant. You know how many rights a servant has? Zero. That's our problem with Christianity in America. We as Americans think that we have rights. But as Christians, we have no rights. Think of that for a while. Let that one sink in. If you truly want to live as a Christian, you give up your rights. You willingly submit and you learn to sense and adapt to the wishes of the one who serve. Who's the one that you serve? Yes, sir. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you had a question, Don. With the windows open, I generally can't hear to begin with, but the windows open, all I'm hearing is the traffic from outside and everything. So I thought Don was saying, be quiet. I'm going to throw something. No, I'm just... we serve God, we ought to be willing to submit. Hey, the Democrats, the Republicans, the doctors, nobody's in control of what's going on but God. And be flexible. I've got some ideas, but I'm not even going to share with you because our ideas aren't worth a plug nickel. Everybody's got their theories of what's happening and everything. The best thing you can do is stick your nose in this book. Huh? You know, the greatest blessing of today was I read the book of Isaiah instead of reading any news. Huh? That's a blessing right there. And folks have got to figure out what. Anyway. Flexibility. Sensing and adapting to the wishes of the one that I serve. Jesus is the ultimate example of what flexibility is. Hebrews 5, verse number 8 says, though he were a son, yet he learned obedience in the things which he suffered. In Luke 22:42, Jesus said, as he prayed just before his crucifixion, he said, Father, if thou be willing, remove this cup from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but thine be done. Jesus is the ultimate example of flexibility. But we're going to talk about another character tonight. One of the men in the Bible that is mentioned in the Hebrews 11. In fact, we're going to turn to Hebrews 11 in a bit. Mentioned in the Great Hall of Faith. In fact, Abraham's mentioned the most in that chapter, and this man we're going to talk about is mentioned second to the most in that chapter. He was greatly used and blessed of God, but sin and anger caused him to be inflexible. And thus, he missed the full blessing of God. But we're going to look at my favorite animal tonight. My favorite animal, of course, in God's kingdom is this guy. And I even figured out how to put some videos on there. Isn't that groovy? Man, that is something else. This is the year that I decided to no longer shoot small bucks because I had to just take pictures of this one as he walked almost close enough for me to jump on his back because I didn't have any more tags left to shoot a buck. I don't know, that picture turned out okay. That was just taken with my phone a few years ago, so the phone wasn't as good as the one I have now. This is my favorite animal. The white-tailed deer, he is an amazing animal. And I could talk for a couple of days what I know about this animal. I'm just going to mention a few things about him. Let's see, I'm going to show you a picture here of some things about this. This animal, his senses, smell, and hearing and eyes are very unique. His ears. Now, some folks say, well, they can hear so well. You know, scientists have done a study. The eardrum and the inner ear of a deer is very similar to a human. Their hearing is no better than us when it comes to their ears. But the big difference is what? That great big sound funnel. In fact, if you watch them, I've got a picture when I didn't dig it out to find it, where a deer was walking away from me and his ears were turned completely around because he knew I was there. He wasn't watching me, but when he walked by me, his ears were turned toward me. When he was walking away, his ears were turned back toward me because he's listening to me. But their ears, they can hear very well, and they can smell. If you go by the size of their nasal passages, this doesn't add to the theory that if you have a big nose, you can smell better, but they do have more of a nasal cavity, so they have more senses in their smell. In fact, my son Nathan ought to have a real good sense of smell, but I realize tease him about his nose, but the kids gather around underneath his nose when it's raining out, but other than that, nobody makes fun of him, but too bad he's not coming home. A pastor invited us to come and preach at their church in a few weeks, and he said, I've heard really good reports from Nathan and Tina, and we really look forward to seeing you. And he said, oh, Nathan. And he started, I can't remember the terms that he used to define Nathan. They were things I can repeat. I just can't remember. And I just said, well, the nut doesn't fall far from the tree. I know where he got that from. Their sense of smell, and one of the things that they do, if you ever notice a deer, those of us who hunt them know that when they're in the area and they think something's around, they depend on their senses to detect danger. And if they think somebody's around, they'll start licking their nose because they have little hairs on their nose that are very sensitive that are actually part of their smelling, and they're licking them to clean them off. Kind of like if you want to see better, you wipe your eyes and try to blink and see better. They're doing that with their sense of smell. And I actually watch them do that. And then their eyes are very unique. And their eyes, they say they don't have real good eyesight, but they have very unique eyes that they can see two directions at the same time. They're double vision, literally. They can be looking at the ground at the same time they're looking up in the ahead of them. So they're constantly watching for danger, and they don't see real clear, but they can see movement. Trust me, I learned that the hard way. Any kind of movement, they can see, but they can't detect things, and they depend on their other senses to figure out what it is. But their antlers are unique. They're antlers, not horns. What's the difference between a horn and an antler? One of the kids tell me? A horn is pokey? Good try. But that's not quite it. But I think we've talked about this. You got the Creation Explorer's hat. Do you know? A horn. Brother Todd played a horn, don't you? An antler falls off every year. They have antlers. In fact, I've got a couple of them right here. I always go looking for sheds. They lose their antlers. And this is the first pair of sheds that I ever found. Probably the best ones I will ever find, too. And literally, they just drop off their head. This one here happened to drop off about 30 feet apart from each other. I'm thinking he was sleeping one day. He got up and shook his head. One fell off, and then he started walking. Another one fell off, and they were right beside each other. And if you notice the pictures of the antlers on this deer, they're covered with a soft, it's called a velvet, actually. In fact, they're very tender. They're very sensitive. This deer was a picture that I took actually close to where Jane lives is where I saw that picture or that deer when I was riding my bike one day, and I just stopped and took a picture of it in somebody's yard actually is where it was, but I tried to hide the house so you can't tell. If they bump, in fact, if you look at this antler, see, it looks like he walked into a tree and got stuck with a stick right there while his antlers were soft, and it's got a permanent dam. And if you notice that, that could have got broke off some other time, but you know, any defects in the antlers is because while they were soft, while they were shaping, they got bent or bumped somehow, and they're very flexible and tender at that time and very sensitive, actually. This is actually an elk, which is in the deer family. I had a picture, but I can't find it, of a deer losing its velvet. Late summer, early fall, the velvet falls off. It just kind of drops off. In the picture I have, actually, the deer, it falls off. They scrape it off, and then they lick it. They eat it off of the tree. In fact, some health food nuts try it. Somehow they collect that, and they sell it. For extra nutritional stuff, but I don't know, you can have it as far as I'm concerned, but they lose, and once they lose that, the antlers turn hard, and they use them, of course, as really a trophy, if nothing else, during hunting season to prove their manlyhood to the little girl ant, deer, and they fight with them, but they really just kind of push each other back and forth. They're if a deer is going to fight with, of course they're very sharp. It can be very dangerous. But the thing that you, if you ever get in a fight with a deer, you know, walking down the street and a deer jumps out of the bar and wants to fight with somebody, you don't really have to worry as much about the antlers as you do their hooves. Their hooves are what they will start pawing at you and fighting with you. But of course they get hard. Then you find them like that. Some of us killed little Bambi, all right? In the springtime, I love to go looking for deer in the springtime. Aww, isn't that cute? There's a fawn and it's mommy. When a fawn is born, they're kind of, I've only seen it a few times when they're so young that their feet are really wobbly, and they can walk just barely. For the first 3 days, they spend most of the time just laying on the ground. And they have those spots because when the light shines on them, when they're laying on the ground, it looks like the shadows of the tree limbs and things, and it makes them very, very camouflage for laying in the ground. And then another thing that they use to help them as small deer, they don't have any scent to them. One thing about a deer, you can, especially during the hunting season, you can, you're used to looking for deer, you can usually smell them when you're walking in the woods before you see them. And my kids make fun of me because we were in Texas a few years ago, and I was riding my bike through this park where there's all kinds of deer, I'd say, I smell a deer. So I'll stop and look around for a while, and pretty soon one will jump up and run off because it was in that time of year when their smell is really strong. But a baby deer has absolutely no smell. The reason for that, because coyotes like to eat baby deer. And up north where there's bear even have a better sense of smell, and they like to find those baby deer and have them over for lunch, literally. So they're born without any smell. The mother, of course, tries to protect them. She kind of stays away as much as she can while the deer is young, just comes to nurse the deer, and then leaves it. And eventually they start, here's a picture of, we're talking about flexibility. Here's a couple of deer that I want to tell you about, something about them, and then tell you a little story, and then we'll go to a Bible character. These deer actually were taken with my trail camera, but I saw those. They were twins. This was a few years ago, and I saw them quite often in the spring. I just like to set up cameras to take pictures of them. One time when I was going out to check the cameras about this time of year, I was kneeling down by my camera getting the little card out, and I saw them coming toward me, and I just kind of, and they just kept coming. Literally, both of them came where I could have just reached out and pet them. They just kept wandering, and they're just having no concern at all until Mama saw them. Well, when Mama saw them, she came running over, wheezing and sneezing and everything else, and kind of gave them a chewing out, and they went running off. They don't have enough sense to know what danger is. And that's why they have Mama around. And the mother's usually watching pretty close. But they were just old enough to where they're starting to venture off on their own a little bit. And it can be a very dangerous time. Now, remember what flexibility is. Sensing and adapting to the wishes of the one I serve. Now, picture this, young people. God gave you parents to protect you. God gave you parents to for you to serve. Not that you're slaves. Some people think their kids are slaves. Some people think that their kids think that they are slaves. But these deer can teach us a lesson of being flexible, not doing what they want to do, but doing what Mama wants them to do. Being inflexible, doing your own thing, wanting to go off on your own can be a very dangerous and even fatal mistake. God provided many protective measures for these deer. The spots and the fact that they don't have any scent at all yet, and then the mama to watch over them. And if you can imagine a fawn deciding, I think I'm big enough, I think I can go out on my own. And it's going out wandering away from mom. Mom's not sure exactly where they are. And all of a sudden the coyote's been watching close. And in just a second, that coyote can pounce on that baby and it's gone. Because it wasn't doing what Mama wanted, it was doing what it wanted to do. And that's what our flexibility is, learning, sensing and adapting to the wishes of the one I serve. Doing what Mom wants, doing what God wants me to do, instead of what I want to do. If you go to Hebrews chapter 11, we're going to look at a Bible character here and learn some things about flexibility. Hebrews chapter 11 and verse number 23, we're introduced to a man. And we're going to see, and you know a lot about his life already. By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hid 3 months of his parents because they saw he was a proper child and they were not afraid of the king's commandment. They thought that they're going to defy the king. They're going to, instead of killing this baby like the king decreed, they're going to protect this baby. The time came where that baby is getting a little bit noisy. They're having a hard time keeping it quiet, keeping it secret. So they're going to have to do something. Of course, you know the story. They put Moses in the bulrushes in the little basket, and Pharaoh's daughter came down and drew little Moses out of the Nile River. And what does the name Moses mean?
Can somebody tell me what the name Moses means? Oh, do any of the kids know? Connor, you're the youngest one. Drawn out of the water. Drew him out of the water. Named by Pharaoh's daughter. That's interesting. And of course, God liked that name. Maybe God put it in her heart to name him that because God's going to use Moses to draw the Israelites out of Egypt. And for the first 40 years, Moses spent in the house of Pharaoh, getting the best education, wearing the best clothing, treated literally as a child, as a grandson of Pharaoh. If you look at verse number 25 through verse number 27 of Hebrews 11, choosing rather, this is by faith, Moses chose rather to suffer the afflictions of the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt. For he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. By faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. He realized that he's got a higher authority, and that is God. In other words, we see this. Moses knew. It wasn't a surprise to him. He knew. I believe he knew from the time his mama weaned him when she was hired to take care of him when he was a little child. I believe mama put in his heart and taught him, God's raising you up for something special. God's going to use you to deliver the people of Israel. Moses knew his whole life he was going to do that. Now for 40 years, he's been serving under Pharaoh and trusting that God is someday going to use me. But I don't know how. And it can be a dangerous thing when we step out from one that's in authority over us to think that we're doing God a favor. So the first thing that we see Moses did in not being flexible, going by his wishes, going by his desires to do even a good thing, he, number one, took things into his own hands. And of course, you know the story of Moses, how he saw an Egyptian abusing one of the Hebrew slaves, and he killed the Egyptian. And he lost his temper. He lost his patience. He was trying to help God out instead of waiting on God. And of course, God took him out in the wilderness for 40 years to try to train him, to teach him to be patient. And still, after 40 years, how did God call it? How did God speak to Moses after 40 years in the wilderness? He appeared to him in what? A burning bush. And remember what Moses said when he realized it was God, and God told him, I want you to go back to Pharaoh. And Moses started to say, he must have stuttered. He said, now God, I can't do that. I'm not a fluent speaker. You know what that was? I believe it was a lie. Moses had the best training under Pharaoh. I can guarantee you he was a gifted speaker. He had the best of education. He was just looking for an excuse. In fact, he used so many excuses, and finally he reluctantly said, okay, I'll do it. Instead of jumping at the opportunity now to do what God wanted him to do, he's not doing too well in his extra 40 years of training. So God was still working on him. In fact, when he was on his way to Egypt, God almost killed him. He got so tired of his excuses. God said, Moses, I've had it with you. All you're doing is grumbling and complaining. You're making excuses instead of doing what I want you to do. You're saying, I'm going to do it my way. I think that we could do it this way. And coming up with his own methods and his own plans. And finally, because he and his wife Zipporah refused to circumcise their boys, finally Zipporah, and there's a trivia question I remember saying, who was it that said, thou art a bloody husband? Zipporah circumcised his children and threw them at the feet of Moses and said, there you go, you're a bloody husband. I don't want to do this. You don't want to do this. I don't know what you're doing. And then God spared Moses' life. Because he obeyed. Though he did reluctantly obey, he eventually went back to Egypt. But he shows us some things about how dangerous it can be not to be flexible. And doing what we want to do, trying to help God out, trying to figure things out. He took things in his own hands. And then, of course, he goes back to Egypt. I'm just pointing out some things about Moses, just like I pointed out a few things about a deer tonight. And he confronted the stubbornness of others. He, of course, went to Pharaoh, and Pharaoh said, why, sure, we'd be glad to let the Israelites go, right? No. And he confronted maybe someone more stubborn than him. And he thought, boy, don't you take the cake. And then, of course, Pharaoh started making things harder on the Israelites. Now the Israelites, hey, Moses is here, our deliverer is here. How are we going to do this, Moses? We're going to take up arms, we're going to go whoop them. God's going to strike them all dead. How's this going to happen? All of a sudden, they're doing twice as much work with no equipment, with no means of doing the work. And they start murmuring and complaining. Moses is getting a taste of his own medicine. Instead of just doing what they're supposed to do, instead of just trusting God, they're starting to murmur and complain. They're not being flexible. They're not sensing and adapting to the wishes of the one that they serve and trusting in God. And Israel had second thoughts following this Moses. And then, this is something to consider here. You got to think of it. Now, I'm looking at Moses maybe in a different light than what you're used to. And Moses was a great man. In fact, I believe he'd be right up in the book of Hebrews when God lists the Hall of Faith. I already said Abraham's given the most verses. Moses given the second most verses in that great chapter of the great heroes of the faith. Moses is maybe the greatest character in the Old Testament. He gave us the law. He gave us the first five books of the Bible. But there are some things that we can learn from Moses, how he was not as flexible as he ought to have been, and how it ultimately harmed him in a great way. And then, thirdly, I want you to see this. Think of this. The Israelites followed his example. Why were the Israelites so stubborn and unflexible? Why were they murmuring, complaining, dragging their feet every time Moses said to do something? They're stubborn and locking horns all the time. You know, I told you when we talk about animals, I'm a turtle. I just get in my shell. I don't like confrontation. Some folks delight in confrontation. In fact, I'd like to have those kind of people for my buddies so they can do my fighting for me, and I can just hide in my shell and wait till it's all over with and be done. But I learned as a little boy, I learned. How many of you seen that? Oh, maybe I shouldn't use this illustration. This doesn't sound real spiritual. But that show that's always out at Christmas time, the Christmas story. You know, the guy's telling the story of the old time. Remember when him and his buddies and his brother are walking down the street and this crazy little boy jumps out with the yellow teeth and the green eyes and everything? Scott? Is that his name, Scott? Well, in my life, his name was David. And every time, the first time I saw it, there's David. I won't tell you his last name in case I ever run into him again. He had kind of like that small dog syndrome. But everybody was afraid of him because he barked he was a scrapper. He was a fighter. He got in a fight with everybody. And I just learned, you know what, David, I'm just going to be your buddy. And that's when I learned, when somebody hits you, if you don't hit them back, they get tired of it real quick. And then you just be a buddy with him. And we became, I was probably friends with him longer than anybody else in our whole school for years, just because I it's not worth fighting. But you learn something when you fight, when folks fight back. What I'm saying here is the leader kind of eggs people on. And because Moses had problem of following because of his inflexibility and his stubbornness, the people were also stubborn that he was leading. In fact, they pushed Moses a little bit too far. Psalm 106 says this. And of course, Moses had a problem with his anger and following orders and commands. In Psalm 106 and verse number 32 and 33 says of Moses that and the Israelites, they angered him also at the waters of strife, that it went well with Moses for their sakes. In other words, they pushed him over the edge, because they provoked his spirit so that he spake unadvisedly with his lips. He did the wrong thing because he just couldn't take it anymore. Now, he tried and he did the best he could, but they kind of learned from him too. Folks say that people followed their leader in more ways than they realize. But Moses was still personally responsible for his sin. And his sin was not controlling his anger and not submitting to the will of the one that's in control of his life. And then one other thing about Moses, that because of what he did, because he never, I was looking and said, because he never got a hold of his angry spirit, but he never learned to be flexible, never learned to change when it was time to change. He missed the full blessing of God. Right? Well, you'd think he would have learned. And you see some things about Moses, you think, you know, God led them through the wilderness for so many years, and they get up in the morning and see if the cloud is still there, they're going to stay put. If the cloud's moving, they're going to move. And that pillar of fire at night and a cloud during the day to protect them from the sun, you'd thought that they would have learned flexibility over those years. You'd have thought he would have learned to be flexible while he was in 40 years of training in the wilderness, watching sheep on the backside of a desert. I'm not sure where the backside of a desert. I don't really care for the front side of a desert. For all those years, he still struggled with his angry spirit and learning to be flexible. And you look back at Moses' life and you think, well, what could have been? How would it have been different? And of course, God has a way of turning things and getting things done despite our failures. But I have a feeling if Moses didn't take things in his own hands and didn't lose his temper and kill that Egyptian, God would have found maybe even a better way to use him to deliver the Israelites. If Moses wouldn't have lost his cool and let the Israelite push him over the edge and just learn to go with it and learn to trust God and to believe God instead of and speaking to the rock instead of smiting the rock, maybe God would have let him go into the promised land instead of just showing it to him and say, okay, Moses, you can look at it, but you're not going to go there. He missed the full, he never got to enter the promised land because, and by the way, the promised land is a picture of the spirit-filled life. And sometimes I wonder if our anger and our lack of being flexible, we miss the spirit-filled life. This is the way I had it all planned out. This is the way I had it all figured out. I had it on my calendar. I figured that by this age, I'm going to be here, and by this age, I'm going to be there, and it's not working, so I'm going to have to help God out. And we never get where God wanted us to be. We never get to enjoy the joy of His presence like we could have had, like Moses could have had. Being flexible. Flexibility, read it with me if you jot it down. I don't have it up here again for you. Flexibility is sensing and adapting to the wishes of the one I serve. And Colossians 3:22 says, servants, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh, not with eye service as men pleasers, but as singleness of heart, fearing God. Realize that God put things into my life for a reason. I need to be flexible, or I'm going to get eaten up by that wolf, by that roaring lion that walketh about. I better learn to be submissive to the one that's under in control of me and learn that God's put them in authority over me, and I don't need to be a rebel. I need to remember and be sensitive and adapt to the wishes of the one that I'm serving. Of course, I'm serving the Lord Jesus Christ. I'm in His army, and we need to trust Him and follow Him. Father, we pray that You